Hey, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Horror Film Lovers. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got my lovely co-host here. How are you doing, Sarah?
Hello, I am Sarah Atkins.
Hey, Sarah. It was great to have you back once again. And we've got our special guest here, John Ward. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. We're excited. So unfortunately, another friend had to drop out at the last minute. She really wanted to do it, but she couldn't do it. And that was okay. So I asked John last minute, hey, do you mind coming on this? And I had no idea. He actually was a pretty big fan of this movie. Like, he liked this movie a lot. So
we got lucky.
Yeah, I did. And actually, it's more fun sometimes to talk to people who don't like the movies, because then you can get a Roger, Ebert and Siskel thing going.
Yeah.
But then again, it's also sometimes fun to talk, especially for this show. This show is Horror Film Lovers. We really do love to talk about films that we love. That's our main thing here.
Yeah, but sometimes we don't know, because sometimes we review movies that we know we love that we just haven't seen in a long time. But sometimes we review movies that we've never seen before. So it's a flip of the coin if we're going to love them or not. So
yeah.
I guess we're about to find out what we think of this one.
Yeah, you loved Pet, mm-hmm. and I had never seen it.
Right, and I've never seen this movie. It was my first time seeing it.
I think most of the ones I've showed you was your first time seeing, though.
A lot of them they were more classic, so it'd just been a while.
Yeah. So, John, when was the first time you saw this movie?
I saw it a while back. I got to be honest. I failed the high seas to see this movie because it. Some people out there will get that, got lost in distribution because the distribution company went out of business. So it sat on the shelf for a couple of years, and I really wanted to watch it. And of course I was able to find it online and watched it there. And now Netflix picked it up. So I was able to watch it a second time on Netflix. And you were just talking about being a fan of one film, but I'm a fan of all of his movies. All of Mike Flanagan, I think, is probably right now my favorite director. So, and he's done no wrong. He has not made one bad film.
Well, no, I mean, I love all of his films so far that I've seen. I don't think I've seen anything. I love Dr. Sleep. I loved Oculus. What was the one that he did where they were trapped? Oh, Gerald's Game.
Hunting Hill.
Gerald's Game
is good.
I saw that one not too long ago, a year ago for the first time, and that was an interesting one as well.
Well, it's funny because I saw this a year ago. I remember exactly where I was because I was prepping to interview the co-writer, Jeff Howard, and I was having to watch, I was watching House on our Haunting Hill House. I was watching, Gerald's Game, and I watched this Before Awake all around the same time. And honestly, I mean, this isn't a terribly scary movie, but it has some really creepy moments to it that I was I was in my apartment locked. My apartment was locked, and I was watching it on my couch, and I was sitting there in the apartment in Van Nuys going, oh my God, my roommate was off with her boyfriend or something, so I was all alone that night. And I was like, oh, great. This is probably not the best thing to watch at night, in a place that you're still sort of getting sort of used to. But it wasn't that terribly scary. They're just, like I said, there's some creepy moments.
There's a few little jump scares in it.
There is.
The imagery is good.
Yeah. There's a few jump scares, which I'm not really a huge fan of jump scares unless they move the story forward a little bit. And I think he did a good job. What do you think, John?
I think that he did a great job with this. Before Dr. Sleep, I kind of thought this was maybe his most Hollywood movie. Because it has probably more CGI than Ouija and some of the other ones that he did. But I really enjoyed it. The one thing that I give him credit for is, the kid is not evil. The parents are not evil. No one around him is evil. The bully is really not even evil. It's just this manifestation that he has created that, you know, kind of haunts him. But mm-hmm. I was going, you know, I was watching this again, and even though I kind of remembered what was going on, I was thinking, oh God, you know, I remember it, but not fully. Please don't make a teacher like try to molest him. Please don't try, you know, please don't make the kid to be the omen. Please don't. Right. And he never did it.
Right.
But he never did it.
Like a pretty sad story. Like it was heartfelt. And it was a tearjerker. And I wouldn't say it had a happy ending, but it had a happy-ish ending.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing bad happened. I mean, there wasn't really a bad guy.
Well, something bad happened. He ate the father, you know.
Yeah, so in the sense of it almost had a happy-ish ending, I say that because of the deaths. It would, you know, if the people would have came back, it would have been a totally happy ending. But because that didn't happen, I would say it was a happy ending, but it would have been nice if they would have been able to come back.
Well, that's what confused me at one point. And you guys maybe can tell me your visions of this. But when there are, so at the end, we're already skipping to the end of the movie.
That's why I was trying to watch what I was saying, because I didn't want to jump to the end. Well,
but we're going to do that. It's going to happen because so there's the scene with her coming to the, I don't know what it's called, the place where it's not orphanage, but you know, the place where all the kids, foster kids, go to before, I guess, going to the so she goes
like the center.
So she goes to the center to get him back, basically. And she kind of faces her fears, which is the tub, you know. And then she goes and she sees the canker woman, you know, the cancer woman, you know, and she hugs her. And then, you know, she kind of tells the guy, but as she's doing this and as like he's sort of coming, whatever, you see all the people that she, you know, that he had basically had eaten, you know, and they all kind of come out a little bit. And I thought that was them coming back to like there were, you know, but then they're never talked about again. And the husband who you do see doesn't come back or whatever. Right. So
I was confused at that as well. And I for what I was trying to piece together is it seemed like the people in that center right there that were being affected in the moment just kind of got released and were okay. Whereas the people who had already been, I guess, you know, like taken beforehand were it was too late. It was confusing to me.
Well, I'm confused about what we're talking about. Are you referring to when they were in a cocoon? Like they were up on the walls?
Yes, yes.
And then that wasn't anybody that they, that the, because remember, it's the canker man.
Right.
So we're supposed to think it's an evil man. But I took that as the kid gets more and more angry because he's taken away from the parents, they're giving him shots. You know, he doesn't want to be there, is his powers get more powerful. So he's now able to take somebody like Annabeth Gish and kind of put her in this cocoon on the wall.
Okay.
And that it's just him getting more and more angry. So as he's leaving and people are falling out, those are staff members.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why the place is abandoned. That's why nobody sees them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like they're all cocooned up against the wall.
Yeah, I eventually realized that wasn't people being really released. It was the members that were there currently that were trapped that were just kind of like free now.
Yeah, anybody else that was eaten by him is dead. They're dead, which is why the mom says at the end, well, you know, picture the dad finding the son. Picture the other dad with the wife. She's like, if you want to remember it in some sort of way, but they never come back. They're dead. He killed them. So that's that's that with that.
Basically, I took that last ending as like they're happy members in heaven, you know, or whatever, you know, in the afterlife, you know. That's what
I took. Well, that's how she wants him to remember.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I thought those.
Which makes it even more horrible, you know, and like sad because, you know, Jonathan, you and I mentioned this, is I don't tear up in movies a lot. And this actually kind of got to me because it's nobody was bad. The dad wasn't bad. You know, Thomas Jane was not bad.
He was he died, he was bad. Exactly. Which, and he fought for like his family, you know, he tried to save his family, you know, like he was such a good guy. And I felt terrible, like, you know, when he disappeared.
It was sad seeing the dad go because it's like the dad was the best part. Like, the dad was amazing.
Right. Thomas Jane was great. And so was Kate Bosworth. Just, she was just so fucking, she melted my heart and stuff. And like, I got it. So we'll talk about what basically this kid can do. If you haven't seen it, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast or whatever, and you're probably very confused by everything we're saying. So basically this kid has this power, you know, and his mom has known this, you know, since he was, I guess, a kid, like, or whatever, that he has this power because, you know, she saw it or whatever. So he has this power to be able to, like, kind of make his dreams come to life, you know, or his nightmares, as was also said. And so his dreams are wonderful and magical and everybody loves them. And oh my God, he could do all these amazing things. Then when the nightmares come, that's when this canker man comes in and, you know, comes to attack him basically. And whoever, you know, whoever basically is around, you know, and that's where he eats the people that, you know, that surround him. And so basically this powerful gift the kid has, it's sort of also a very big curse to him because nobody can stay in his life, you know, because once the nightmares happen, you know, and so I kind of feel like, I don't know if either one of the writers, I didn't ask Jeff any of these questions. I'm kind of sad I didn't now that I'm here, but like, I'm wondering if any of the writers kind of wrote from like an experience of being orphaned or fostered, you know, and sort of those feelings, you know, that somebody had with that, you know what I mean? Like, because it is the sort of feeling of being lost inside the foster homes, you know, and sort of like, there's no control and he didn't do anything, you know, like people keep abandoning.
I would think at least they probably did research, or maybe this came from something personal, because it's with the adults, it's how they deal with the loss of a child, but then with the child, it's how he deals with cancer from an adult, his mom. So you're looking at two different losses here. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely stuff that people can, like the characters could definitely relate to. So probably it came from one of their lives, or they knew somebody, or you know, a kid or something like that. Because it's, you know, imagine what this kid could do, you know, when people are nice to him. But what if this, you know, what if he was put into a family that were like, you know, meth users or something?
Imagine those nightmares. Yeah. A monster would be very full.
Right.
So and like we keep saying, that everybody was really nice. Even the little girl who reached out to him, you know, in class. She was nice. She wasn't like a mean girl or anything, you know.
But nothing really happened to her, though, right? Like she's scarred for life now from
witnessing that monster, you know, eat the bully.
Exactly. Yeah. And the bully, man. Well, I mean, the bully. See, and here's the thing. Like, I felt sorry for the bully. Like, even though he was a jerk to the kid. That happens a lot. That happens in every freaking, like, you know.
He was a bully, but he wasn't an extreme bully to where you hated him. It was just, okay, this kid's kind of a dick.
Right. Like, you get it, though, because there's at least one in every school. There's going to be that kid that's going to pick on the new kid.
Right,
you know?
Because he's probably getting picked on at home. So he goes to school and he picks on somebody else.
Yeah, we never really, I mean, you never really dive into his, like, backstory or anything, but you don't need to.
Story is with kids like that.
Yeah, you don't really need to.
No, but he didn't last very long.
No.
Well, and the little kid, the main kid, kind of eyeballed him. you know, when he was brought in because he was being disciplined. So he kind of eyeballed the bully, and that set it all off. It's like, okay, you eyeballed me. Now I'm going to bug you. You know, now I'm going to bully you. You're my target.
Yeah,
exactly. So yeah. poor, you know, and like he didn't deserve any of that. Like the main kid, Cody, what was his name?
Cody. Yeah.
Yeah. Cody didn't deserve any of that. You know, like he was such a, you know, he was such a sweet kid. He didn't, like, he liked butterflies, you know, like he had this like really good heart, you know, and he liked the monarch butterfly because of his mom. His mom gave him that monarch butterfly when he was a kid, and it's kind of stuck with him. And he wasn't too much older than, you know, like, I think he was like, what, 10, 8, maybe, you know, something like that.
I think they said 8-year-old. Yeah, I think they said 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Because that one guy said, are you going to stop an 8-year-old from having a nightmare ever again?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. When he was a sweet kid. But I mean, yeah, he was in the foster care system over and over again because families never worked out because of these dreams and this monster eating people, but he kept getting put back in the system. But I just, it makes you wonder though, like the lady who kept fostering him out obviously knew that there was something going on. And one guy even went in the mental institution. So it's like, you're going to keep fostering this kid out? Like, wouldn't you investigate? Wouldn't you do some studies on him? I would have put him in a sleep research study, and then everybody would have known, and it would have been known. And,
well, you know, she did know about the dreams, you know, right? She did know about that, because there's that one line where Kate Bosworth saying, like, basically, you knew about this. You must have known, you know, because she looked concerned when she said something about the dreams.
Right.
So, like, she knew about it. So, yeah, I would say a sleep, like, experiment.
Because you know, at the orphanage, he had to sleep sometimes. So, you know, that stuff had to have been going on slightly there, too. So, it's like how it wasn't unnoticed, I'm sure. It's like she was trying to hide it and hope that the family just worked out for once. But I don't know.
By the way,
lady, I would have tried to study that a little more. I mean, it's paranormal. Wouldn't you, if you had a kid in foster care and he had some paranormal dreams and monsters and people were disappearing, do you keep putting them into homes, or would you try to help?
Well, was monsters ever said to the to that lady though? I mean, who knows? Like,
well, I'm assuming if he had, every time he had a nightmare, the monster came out. Like, if he was sleeping at the orphanage every night, I'm sure they experienced the monster and the butterflies as well, wouldn't they?
Maybe.
I would think so, but she seems pretty amazed at the end.
Right? That just kind of confused me, though. I was like, how did she not experience any of this at the orphanage whenever he slept?
We need the pitch guys, you know? The pitch, them to...
I don't know.
Right? Like, I think they just combed over that part so they could have the movie, but... Yeah. That was the first thing I thought, though, is when he got into the new home and it happened, I'm like, you can't tell me that lady who fostered him out had no idea that he did this.
How... Oh, wait, hold on, though. John's gonna love this. You know, asking the question of, you know, well, is it going to be hard for her to, you know, for her to save her child's life? John? It's going to be super easy, tight? Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, super easy, barely an inconvenience.
Yes, super easy, barely an inconvenience. It's going to, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, there's like probably little plot holes like that in this, you know, in this, but it's okay, you know, like those little things, like you can kind of sweep under the rug because
it was just questions that I kept having about the orphanage. I'm like, this orphanage is not very good.
Well, and especially like if he has good dreams at the orphanage, then they'll still see like all these butterflies floating around. Like, what is, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I'm drinking my coffee, so I'm keeping myself stimulated.
Let's go into the new home he's going into. So this little kid is obviously going from foster care home to foster care home, and bad things are happening, and he gets placed in this home, and she thinks it's going to be a good fit because the parents who are adopting him lost a son, mm-hmm. and they have this hole in their heart and they've been devastated, and she hasn't been sleeping at night, you know, and they've been going to therapy and they're wanting to move on. Like she her husband wanted to sell the house so they could start over and forget about the kid's death. She didn't want to. She hung on. She wanted to keep the house. So they finally, they got paired up with this kid, thought it'd be a good match because, you know, he needed somebody. They needed somebody. They took down all of his all the old kid's photos, brought this kid in to start over, you know, with this kid and give everybody a good life. And then all of a sudden these things started happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to give us a little thing for the backstory for the people who are listening about that.
Exactly. So I, you know, honestly, I could get the fact that she wanted to keep seeing her former son, mm-hmm. you know, and all that. And I had seen this movie last year, but I remembered it and sort of forgot a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'd only watched it once and, you know, but there's the, you know, the scene where she basically has him watch the video and the VHS. And I was laughing my ass off at that going, don't do that. That's terrible. And then you look at, what's his name? You look at Thomas Jane's character the whole time. He was very uncomfortable. No. He's like, I don't know if we should be
I was yelling
this.
At the TV myself because, you know, like I am a parent and I understand the loss of your child is really hard and you want to say goodbye and you want to see them again. But when you bring a new child into your home and then you use them to see a projection of your old child, like the father said, this feels like abuse. You shouldn't have shown him that video. You shouldn't have tried to get him to do these things. Instead, you should be showing him a new life and moving on instead of hanging on. But I felt the father's vibe the entire time going, I understand you're mourning, but that was not okay to do to that boy.
Well, and it's manipulated. So yeah. She knew exactly what she was doing. Is once she realized that when the kid was looking at the portrait on the wall mm-hmm. and could see the dead son, he couldn't talk.
Right.
So she had to play the video
to get the voice.
So the kid could hear the voice. So then mm-hmm. when he popped up again, the kid could talk. So she knew exactly what, you know,
she was doing. And she let a consumer, she would drink coffee all night, stay up all night, hopes just to see her kid hurting herself, and then eventually drug the kid with sleeping medicine, you know, to get these dreams out of him.
She thought she was healing. That was the thing that drove me crazy mm-hmm. is that's not healing. Healing is moving on and knowing, you know, like your son's unfortunately, you know, gone, but.
I don't know about that. I don't know if the whole thing of like drugging him was trying to heal him. I think that she wanted to drug him to keep her kid, you know.
No. I mean, no. I meant
as long as possible.
The healing part, I think, was like her trying to see the kid again, right? So
she was trying to heal herself.
Yeah. So her trying, no, like her healing was trying to see the kid or her original, like her former son. Again and again, right? She thought that she even said something like, you know, we need to heal. Yeah.
She was trying to heal herself and be selfish and not think about what she was doing to that child.
But I don't think that she was trying to heal though. I think that she was, if she could keep the adopted son asleep 24/7 and have her dead son there,
I think
that she would be perfectly fine with doing that, which is why she.
Which I think her just saying that she was doing it to heal was just her telling herself, you know, giving herself validation, or I guess, you know, of this is okay because I'm healing when really right. she's taking advantage.
Because if you, you know, remember, she blames the husband for their son's death.
Yeah, and they never really said why. Yeah, I know he drowned in the bathtub, but they didn't really touch into more than that.
Yeah, they didn't even really show. Like, I thought they would show a flashback more of like what actually happened.
Right.
You know,
they showed the kid drowning, and she said something about it being the husband's fault. And then I guess that they put those bars there because like the kid was drowning, so I'm assuming that he couldn't get up out of the water, you know, and that's why they put the bars there. But
and there's
into it.
There was that scene where he was in the bathtub you know, mm-hmm. the new kid was in the bathtub and she was like scared to death that that would happen again, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever. And I think Thomas Jane had a line where he said something like that would never, because he explained everything to the kid, which I thought, you know, honestly, I was scared of him doing that because mm-hmm. that was already telling that kid, you know, something that he did not, you know, that putting him into his imagination, what could be happening. And he already knew what that kid looked like. So I was like, right. Uh-oh, there's going to be a scene. I thought there was going to be a scene where he was going, they were going to have that where it was going to be the nightmare where right. she would go to the bathroom and hear the kid drowning and like, you know, and there was nothing she could do to save him and stuff. And I was like, I'm glad they didn't do that. But like, well, that's where I thought it was going to happen.
Later on, though, where she did walk into a, like a dark area or dark room and there was a bathtub with yep. the kid drowning and she just kind of had to walk away from it.
Well, that was part of her healing, you know, yeah. her healing was that part. Oh, yeah. And I love that.
Well,
scene.
Her turning away. Yeah.
Yeah. Her turning yeah. away was her going, I'm going to let this go. Like, this is not, you know, like nothing I can do, you know what I mean? Kind of thing. And I'm going to go find the kid, but you know,
because yeah, my guess was that the dad let their son, like probably maybe this was like, he was unsupervised for the first time, right. you know, and he's telling the wife, don't worry. He's fine in the tub. It's good. Leave him alone. Give him his privacy. Let him play. And then the next thing you know, they come in and he's dead, which is why the wife is then like, I just want to hear that he's okay. You know, the adopted kid, that he's yeah. okay in the bathtub. The funny thing is that with the wife blaming the dad for their son's death, she kills the husband, you know, yeah. because she drugged, you know, the new kid that, you know, the husband was killed. So it's interesting that there's these whole things of, you know, I blame you unfairly for our son's death, but I'm also going to drug our new child, which will then kill you.
Right. Yeah, that was, you know, well, she didn't know that was going to happen, but like, yeah, I can see where, and that, I thought that would have like fucked her up even more, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like having that on your conscience that you were basically the reason why your husband is now gone and now eaten, by this,
And before the husband died, we didn't really, like, we touched a little bit on, but, he was going to school. And he was drawing things at school, like the butterfly, and he was making the friend and the bully. And then he was drawing the monster and trying to cover up the monster so the monster would go away because he started seeing the monster again. And then that, you know, the experience of the bully, though, is he started to fall asleep in school and he kept trying to pinch himself awake, you know? And eventually he fell asleep and the monster showed up at school.
Yeah. And then the monster.
I gotta say that when Cody does fall asleep at school, I was so jealous of his desk pillow. I remember when the teacher back when I was that age, she would just say, you know, just put your head down like that. He had a pillow. He had like a desk pillow. And I was like, but that is cool. I want a desk pillow too. Right. Why couldn't I have one when I was a kid?
Why can't you have one now?
Exactly. I got a desk right here. I could use it on all my breaks, but I gotta sleep like this. So
that's funny.
When that monster showed up in school though, and ate that little bully, that little girl walked up on it and saw it, and that's now she's scarred. But she screamed and woke him up, and the monster disappeared. But I kept thinking, I was like, if she just would have screamed when she first saw the monster, and he like did that back contorting thing instead of after he ate the kid. Maybe he would have woken up in time before the kid got eaten. I wish he would have screamed just a little bit sooner.
Well, then we wouldn't have had a movie.
We wouldn't have, but then that boy would be alive.
You know, which is, I mean, that's, yeah, yeah. And that was a big thing is like the cops came to investigate and everything, which I thought, I mean, I get it because like apparently that kid was the last one to see him and everything. But also wasn't the little girl the last one to see him, you know? Yeah.
Which like, it looked like they were investigating her and talking to her when he was trying to hurry up and get in the car going, Mom, we got to go. Mom, we got to go.
Which, because I bet he was thinking she was going to point at him and be right. like, oh, she saw it too. And then like he'd have to explain that, like, because
I fell asleep in class, my monster ate a kid, we gotta go.
Well, okay, so I wonder about that. What did the girl say, I wonder, to the cops? Because
I don't know. You know,
like
the kid fell asleep, I saw a monster and ate the kid. Like,
and then when I woke up, it was gone.
Yeah. I don't think it's hard to say, because she was seeing everything that the kid was, that Cody was doing. You know, you right. brought up like the pinching. She saw that. She saw him draw the canker man and then mark it up. I mean, she noticed this more than anybody.
She did.
So she had a whole bunch of stuff on him that she could have told the cops. So, but she's a kid, so the cops aren't going to believe her that some monster, you know, ate the bully. You know, they would probably be looking for the janitor or something.
It was also interesting, though, that once the dad did disappear, they started to ask, okay, now that your husband's gone too and the kid is gone, where was he during the time the kid disappeared? Like, all of a sudden they started kind of accusing him of disappearing because he took the kid, you know?
You know what? I kind of wish. Yeah, that sort of happened too. And that was a little weird. But I kind of wish the little girl had more of a part, you know, like she was helping the mother or something, you know, because she saw this thing too. So she's in it, you know, like, you know what I mean? I just wish that, but then the father sort of gets blamed. You know who Thomas Jane sort of reminded me of? This is going to be sort of weird, but it sort of reminded me of Kevin Bacon. Okay. Like I could have seen Kevin Bacon in that role as well, you know?
Yeah, I could have seen that.
Yeah. They're both kind of a little similar. I just sort of, whenever I see Thomas Jane, I think The Punisher. So like, I'm like, oh my God, The Punisher is now a father. Like,
he just full on took on that role of that kid's dad and took him out, made sure he had his favorite pizza, got him a race car bed, painted his walls with them. Like, it was so nice and wholesome. And it was just so sad when that kid, you know, lost that person in his life, because that could have been a big change in his life.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So let's go back. I want to go back a little bit and I want to talk real quick about the idea, I guess the manifestation of the canker man and the fact that basically he just got the word cancer wrong. Right. So it was always like he was the cancer man, but it was really the mom, because if you remember at the end, you see the mom, she had, you know, no hair she was really sick. She talked really
monster.
And she said the words that the canker man says to him, which is, I'll always be, I'll always be with you. And I thought that was so fucking good. But I'm just wondering, had he understood sort of, which he couldn't at the age of 3, you know, like you can't explain cancer to a kid. But had he understood, things may have been differently, you know,
he wouldn't have had those nightmares.
Well, you would have probably had nightmares.
Yeah, but it would have been something else. Hopefully not that bad, but yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I wonder what is going on with the kid now. Like, what would, you know, if they were to make a sequel to this movie, which I would not want them to do at all. Don't. I love you, Mike. I love you, Jeff. Do not make a sequel to this movie. It does not need one. It is perfect as is. Right. And a sequel, I feel like, would ruin it. But real quick, I do want to kind of think about the question of, like, what would these, you know, what would they be up to right now? Like, I mean, because he still has to have nightmares. Every kid has nightmares. Every adult has nightmares. You know, would they still manifest? Or is it over?
I think it's over. I think it's over. That was the whole thing, is that the once he understood what cancer was, and once the mom, you know, once the mom hugged the cancer man or the canker man, and then which looked like the mom, and it disappeared, and stuff, I think it's over. It's done.
Right. The canker man whole nightmare thing is done. But I think you're trying to get at is what would replace that nightmare? Like, now that the canker man is gone, is there something else that would scare the kid enough to appear in its place?
Or John, are you saying like his manifestations, like his dreams and all that stuff do not come to reality anymore? Like, is that all gone too? Like
the whole thing is done?
I think it's completely done. It's absolutely okay. Done.
I don't think so. Only reason why is because it wasn't the canker man to begin with. Remember, his mom had always known he was special. He had this like gift. She wrote it in his journal. He had a gift since he was 3, 2, whatever, that whatever he dreamt and whatever came to life. So the only thing. So that's why I think Sarah and I are kind of correct on that, is that there is probably something still going on. It's just not, it'll be different nightmares. It would be different dreams. You know, he might still see butterflies.
So I have to change it. I agree with you that because I would probably say the butterfly thing is gone. I think everything within this movie is gone. So if they did another one, he would probably, if he's around something bad,
right?
Then
it's based on the surroundings. It would be based off whatever's going on in his life.
Like let's say he had a girlfriend or a wife, and she died, and she gave him a flower, and that's then what we would see instead of the butterfly. Yeah.
I don't think I don't think so. But I mean, I can get that though, because like the butterflies was the mom thing, you know. So maybe all the stuff with the mom might be gone.
The book of the butterflies every night, so that's right. What comes in his brain before he fell asleep.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe if he stopped looking at that, he would be thinking of something else.
Something else every night, like about cats every night. Maybe he'd see cats.
You would like that.
I would,
and so would John. You both would like that.
That's why I said, what if he was around something bad? Like, what if he was reading, you know, a book about the Spanish Inquisition or the Salem witch trials? Or,
I did mention when I watched this movie,
Nazi Germany.
So this kid is not allowed to watch horror movies or scary movies ever.
I know. That's a terrible life to live, especially for us horror film lovers.
Right. He's not allowed to watch scary movies because
they come to life.
Jason, and all of a sudden Jason's going to manifest at night. And you're going to be like, shit.
I know.
It'd just be axes or, you know, like machetes floating around.
So this kid is going to end up working at a haunted house, and he's just going to sleep all night and manifest all these monsters for the haunted house and just make tons of money.
Yeah, well, all of them would kill everybody, so that would be like no, you know, like there would be no money because there would be a big lawsuit on their hands.
That's why you sign a contract when you go in that you enter at your own risk.
Enter at your own risk. You might actually be killed by Jason.
Right.
but no, it's that's what I like about this movie. Really bad. Like there are thoughts, like there are things that you could talk about and think about. It is you can have to like open discussions about this stuff. And, and there's not that many, honestly, there's not that many like deep thought horror films these days. Right. A lot of it is like, okay, guy in a mask slaughters people. That's it. And you might have a cool backstory with it, but this kind of reminds me a little bit of a more dramatic, more whatever version of like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know? Like, you know, just the idea of, you know, Freddy being in your dreams and can come into reality, you know, if you grab him, you know, that kind of thing. So I like that. You know, I like that they took a different turn on it. And once again, like you said, I think it was you, John, who said, basically, there's no bad people in this movie. Nobody, you know, even the bully isn't a bad person. You know, right. The canker man is not a bad person.
And even in the beginning, so when the movie starts, one of his foster dads walks into the room with a gun and is going to kill him because he thinks that'll be the only way to stop all of this. And you hear the gunfire, and at first I thought for sure he killed the kid, but he didn't. Instead, he went to an institution himself. So even he couldn't be a bad guy, and he couldn't hurt the kid. Which that's another little story in the movie that we haven't touched on yet, or just talked about, was there was this guy, which I only know him from Ray Donovan, but I don't know his name, but I know he's been in a lot of stuff. That redhead guy, he's awesome, dude. but
Dash Mihawk, I think was his name. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
He was one of the foster families. Him and his wife had many foster children. He fostered the kid, and then all of a sudden, that monster appeared while they were sleeping and ate his wife. And he tried so hard for the kid to bring the wife back so he could hug her and remember her. But he was so young, he couldn't remember her correctly. So every time she came back, just like the dead little boy, her face was like wrong. So he would hug her every night and it just wasn't her. And he tried so hard not to hate the kid for remembering her wrong or for taking her away, but it drove him insane and he got put in the institution. You know, his wife was gone and the kid was just too young to understand what was going on.
Well, and that kind of goes back to something that Jonathan mentioned, which is, you know, what would he be like, you know, as an adult? Because
right. He
mentions, the dad says, his brain hasn't formed because of his age, that he can't take the wife's face
right.
and put it on there correctly. More
powerful?
So, yeah. So
God, it'd be like the Antichrist.
Now. Yeah.
You know? I would think instead of just one monster and butterflies, he would probably be able to have more, because you know dreams are more vivid than just, oh, there's butterflies. So just imagine though when he's fully developed, though, like how much more intense things are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there was a real, go ahead John.
Oh no, I was just gonna say just this two little side notes that I noticed two things in it. One, of course, they're playing on TV at one point, The House on Haunted Hill, mm-hmm. with Vincent Price, which I like.
Nice.
Public domain, so that's probably how they got away with that one. Also, there's a large stack of Stephen King books.
Oh, interesting. Do you think that might have attracted Stephen King so you could write for Stephen King later? I don't know. You know, like because Mike Flanagan, as we said earlier, had also directed Gerald's Game and co-wrote it and did Dr. Sleep and both Stephen King things. Mm-hmm. And I think Stephen King probably was, I mean, I would guess was a fan of this movie if he had seen it, you know, or whatever, because it's a really solid horror film. But like, oh, that goes back to what we were discussing on back and forth, John, on text. You don't believe this is that you believe this is a horror film without being a horror film, right? Like, or something like that, right?
I think it's disguised as a horror film. Yeah, I don't think that it's a traditional horror. I think if somebody rented this expecting the Bye Bye Man or something like that, that they'd be a horror
Slender Man, you know,
or Slender Man. Yeah, it's not that. It's just so it's almost like I said, it's like, you know, the loss of a child, you know, how a child deals with cancer, but it's disguised as a horror film.
I'm so glad they didn't call it the Canker Man. You know, like they could have very much called it that. And
would have made it more under the impression it was a monster movie or something, though, which it really wasn't. It was more deep rooted into the emotions and the drama.
This was not its original title. Speaking of, you're glad that they didn't call it The Canker Man. The Before I Wake is the studio title. Mike Flanagan wanted a different title on it, and he fought to keep the original title. It's one word. It's like C-I-M-E-O-N or something like that. It's just one word. And they wanted to get rid of it and use Before I Wake.
I like Before I Wake, honestly. I think that was a good title for it. But it's sort of, I mean, I guess like it just gives you like that thought of like, what is this going to be? I know this is going to be something about going to sleep, you know, but
all these things that happen before I wake up.
But it seems like Flanagan does like his one word titles. I mean, Oculus.
Oh,
he did, you know, of course, Ouija.
Somnia.
Somnia. Okay, there you go. Also, of course, Hush.
Right.
Like he likes using one of his first ones is, I think it's a Spanish word, but it means ascent is one of his first
Absentia.
Ones. Absentia.
So So it said this movie was originally titled Somnia, which would have made it the third film by Mike Flanagan featuring a single Latin word for a title after Absentia and Oculus. So apparently all of those are Latin words, you know? I don't know. I was just using for one of my scripts, I was using a English to Latin translation kind of thing, which was pretty cool. You know, seeing all these Latin words getting made from English, you know, or phrases, you know. But yeah, so I don't know. It would have. This is kind of cool. Like, apparently it was filmed in the same location, Fairhope, Alabama, as Mike Flanagan's horror film Oculus. I actually really, 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 really dug Oculus. Like,
I love Oculus.
That may be another horror film lovers episode sometime, maybe in second.
I've never seen it, so I will have to check it out.
Second season or something, but it's definitely. I mean, all Mike Flanagan's movies are amazing. I have not seen one I didn't like, you know, yet. I don't think even Ouija Origin of Evil, which I hate the first Ouija movie completely. And I was like, I don't know if I want to see the second one. And then I watched it. And I was like, this is fucking good, you know? And then they made the third one and
yeah.
So, you know, they should have kept him, you know, kept him going or whatever with it.
Yeah, the only thing I haven't watched from him is Bly Manor. That's it, The Haunting of Bly Manor. Because he doesn't direct all the episodes. So I haven't watched it yet. But that's the only thing I'm missing.
Oh, you haven't watched all... yeah, I haven't watched the Bly Manor one yet. So, but I really like the Haunting of Hill House. And I'm looking forward to everything he does. Like, I love Dr. Sleep. Some people didn't like it and stuff and told me, and I was just like, I can't argue, you know, because it's just taste, you know, or whatever. But I really enjoyed it. You know, it was fun.
I think it's one of his best films, especially that director's cut is great. And I think you have to understand that it's a sequel to the movie, but you also need to know the book and the miniseries. So it's like, you kind of have to know everything to get Dr. Sleep. So I think it's great. I think it's really good.
Did you read the original Dr. Sleep? Was it a book, the Stephen King book?
I did not. I should. I read a lot of his books up to a point, and then I just kind of stopped. So I kind of need to go back and do it. But with Dr. Sleep, while I was watching the film, I was going back and looking at what are the differences between the book and the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting because in the book for Dr. Sleep, the hotel is not there. It is burnt down to the ground.
Okay.
And so they do go back to the burnt down hotel in the book.
Have you seen, Sarah, have you seen Dr. Sleep yet?
I saw it a while ago, but I only watched it the one time, and I'm not a reader, so I never read any of the books or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm not really a reader either, so I haven't read any of the Stephen King books, period, you know. But I mean, I know sort of, you know, which I'm sure would piss Stephen King off, so I'm sure if he's listening to this. Sorry, Stephen. if you're listening to this, that's amazing. That would make me happy, but I don't think he would... you'd be happy with the fact that I haven't read his books. But I do love Dr. Sleep, the movie. And I get it. Like that in the book is a little bit different. I wonder because like Stephen King has a little bit more say these days. I wonder if he was okay with Mike Flanagan's decisions to change things, you know,
he approved it. He okayed it.
Okay.
Because that was the thing, is that the studio wanted a sequel to the movie, not the book.
Mm-hmm.
So Flanagan worked with King to, you know, to get his approval on that. So I highly recommend his books, even if you could just do audiobooks. I mean, that's because all of his books are different. I mean, I don't like Stanley Kubrick's The Shining because I'm a Stephen King enthusiast and I think the book is really great. So I prefer the miniseries.
Star Anthony Michael Hall or something? Am I wrong about that? Who did it star? It stars somebody.
The guy from Wings.
Oh,
the TV show Wings.
God, what's his name? I know who you're talking about. He was at a convention.
Weber,
too.
Something Weber.
Stephen Weber. Stephen Weber.
Stephen Weber, yeah.
Yeah. I love that guy. He was at a convention and I saw him but didn't get a chance to chat with him because he was too busy with people.
If you read The Shining, it is incredibly different from the book. I mean, incredibly different. You know, just like Dead Zone is different, all of those. Children of the Corn is even different.
Children of the Corn I've also heard he wasn't a fan of. You know,
they on the TV remake that they did, they used his script.
Oh, okay.
That he wrote for the original Children of the Corn, and so it follows the short story much
closer. Oh, okay. Anyway, we're going off topic here. We're going on to Stephen King, which has nothing to do with Before I Wake.
We should probably get back to the movie we're talking about.
Yes, we should probably right now. But you know, we're probably reaching toward the end of this discussion. So all in all, I really enjoyed rewatching this movie. I felt like I told both of you guys around the same time that I cried during this movie, mm-hmm. which I was not expecting that to happen, you know, or whatever. Right. And it wasn't tears of like sadness. It was tears of joy, to be honest,
right.
because like everything sort of at the end kind of was like a happy-ish ending, as was right. said, you know.
Right. And family movies kind of do that too, especially when they involve little kids. They kind of tear you up a little bit.
Yeah, and the kid was amazing, Jacob Tremblay.
Yeah, I saw him, and he's been in so much stuff. He was in Room. He was in a lot of good stuff.
I know, but not The Room, which is the Tommy Wiseau movie.
No, just Room.
Room.
Just Room.
But no, I wouldn't mind watching this movie again. It's a movie I feel like I watched it once. I had a lot of questions. I'd like to watch it again knowing what I know, because when I watched it, I didn't even watch a trailer. I just went into it blind. So it would be nice to watch it again. I had so many questions, and I was yelling at the TV like half the time. And I do think it did have a happy-ish ending, which is very rare, with no like real villains. And I think they did a good job on it.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job. And once again, Mike Flanagan and Jeff Howard, who co-wrote the movie together, I think they fucking nailed it. You know, I would love to interview him again at some point, just ask him more like specific questions about this movie. Cause you know, like there were questions I had more on the second viewing that I didn't have the first time, you know? I think maybe because I thought of them, but I was getting ready to talk about it, you know, like right. a lot of times you don't, you're not planning to just chat with people about the movie you just saw, you know?
I watched it with somebody, so I bantered back and forth with them about it for a bit.
Yeah,
I think Flanagan doesn't answer things. I think he does that on purpose. So, like, but you know, like in Hush, you don't know why the guy is trying to kill her. This, you don't really fully understand the kid, and
yeah, you don't know where.
You know, he doesn't answer certain things.
Yeah, you don't know where the dreams come from. Like, why is he dreaming these things?
And so, sometimes it's better not to have all the answers and to just sit there and discuss it with yourself and wonder, you
unless,
know,
unless you're M. Night Shyamalan and then you then you try to answer every question, you know. We won't go into that. It seems like that's a sore subject for John.
Well, I do love The Happening, so you know, I watch it every Earth Day.
Oh my god, all right, we can't talk to you anymore. You're done. You're cut off. The trees are coming to get you. I guess with the wrapping up this whole conversation on it, and like this is, like I said, this is horror film lovers. These are films that we love. We don't generally, I don't try to pick something that, you know, that I don't think like Sarah would like, or my guest would like, you know, wouldn't like, you know, like I try to find something I know most likely universally liked.
I think when we pick something, because we rotate on whose turn it is, we go ahead and we know we at least like the movie ourselves first. We don't pick a movie that we don't like or we hate for the other one to review. It's always usually going to be something that, you know,
if I pick a movie for you to watch, I already watched it once.
Right.
And have approved it for a, I like it. Let's see if you like it.
Exactly. That's the other thing is we make sure that we've already seen the movie at least once.
Going in blind. At least one of us has seen the movie and knows that it's a good
movie. Yeah, it's a good movie. We've done stuff like earlier before she joined us. I did like The Stuff, you know, which is a great classic, like 80s. Cheese, you know, but it's fun. It's a fun movie. And then with us, we've had what is it? We just did was the one that you had me watch.
We just did Devil's Candy.
The Devil's Candy, which is really good. I really enjoyed it. You know, but next year we'll have to do another Ethan Embry movie, but I don't want to try to do two things in a row or whatever in the same season, you know. But thank you so much for joining us, John, like for this episode.
We know it was last minute, but I'm glad that we got you. You seem very knowledgeable.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I had fun. So I always take notes, lots of notes.
Okay. So yeah. did you read any of your notes? Did you have to?
Well, I got them right here. Yeah. You know, Hollywood, Netflix, Loss of a Child.
Was there anything in your notes that you did not get off your chest that you just feel like you need to put out there?
The music. Music I thought was really good. Danny Elfman and the Newton Brothers. And the Newton Brothers work a lot with Flanagan. So.
Oh, wow. I forgot Danny Elfman did the music because I saw that in the credits and was like, Danny Elfman? What?
I think he did the theme. Yeah, I think he did the theme and then the Newton Brothers did the rest of it.
Oh, that is awesome. The theme was really good. The music was fantastic. But, you know, it's funny. I'm not as into music and stuff. Like, you know, like after a while it becomes like background to me. Like, I mean, it's background music, but
background music. But if you don't have the right background music to set the mood and the tempo and stuff, your feelings completely change. So, you know, like it's important. And the flow is very important because you can't have a serious moment and then it just, you know, be playing something totally goofy in the background.
I bet John and I have seen a bunch, maybe even you, Sarah, that have done that, you know, where it's terrible music set to like,
it just distracts you from what's actually going on.
You're like, why did they put that in there? You know?
Or the music drowns out the dialogue.
God. Sound is always important. And I mean, you can't talk about a movie like this, like that, because like this is a professional film, like period, right. You know, like this is not an indie film at all. And as
the audio levels were great. It wasn't where the background was too loud for the talking, and it was a perfect range.
Like you said, John, this is a very Hollywood, you know, film for even Mike Flanagan. But his films are still sort of very, very professional, look amazing. Oh, yeah. Just like Oculus was like one of their first ones, I think, you know, that they did. It's always been just amazing. Hush, you know, everything looks great, you know. Mike Flanagan, I think, should definitely, like, I'm excited to see what else he does, you know, like all the time. So I'm excited to see that. And I know Jeff is currently working on producing the Resident Evil for Netflix. So good for him. The series that they're doing for Netflix. So that's amazing. I love that they're working with Netflix, you know, and everything. And I can't wait to see what else, you know. Was Hush Blumhouse, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I remember. Okay. Because I was always, I think, because it's always strange. Jason Blum talked once about how basically he, or Blum, how do you say it? I think it's Blum. But I could
it's
be wrong.
Blumhouse,
yeah. So it's Jason Blum, right?
Yeah.
I think. Okay. Anyway, Jason Blum, I think, had a thing where he talked about how he makes his movies and what he does. And he was talking in an interview and he said what he generally tries to do for the directors. He tries to find a director who did a really good, like maybe a really good first movie or second movie or whatever. And then all of a sudden kind of didn't do so well, like James Wan. With Insidious, he, you know, And I think that's what he did with Mike Flanagan, is Mike Flanagan made a great first, and maybe his second movie didn't do as well. And then, you know, so he gave him the opportunity to make Hush, you know, and it kind of helped him, you know, get back on track and everything, and continue to make amazing movies. So I always thank him for that. But now, after hearing they made a $400 million series for fucking The Exorcist, I'm like, oh god. I'm like, they're not sticking to their $1 million to $5 million rule, you know.
No,
not anymore. You know, they've kind of moved on up. But I really appreciate you coming on, John, and chatting with us. What have you been up to?
Doing my own podcast, as you know, the One Filmmaker, One Film. You guys can see that on YouTube. Working on getting back into working on my short Delete. And then, of course, Axiomus 3 and 4. Different stuff like that. So just trying to get back into film mode.
Awesome. Awesome. And Sarah, you and I have got Horror Film Lovers next month, and it's going to be your pick. So all right. That's going to be fun. I have no idea. Looking. Yeah, you're going to have to start looking because you haven't told me what you got yet. So I think we've got a few more episodes, and then we're going to get up to, I think, episode 10, and then we'll take a, you know, take a couple month break and then come back. So we got a few more left in this season, and I'm really excited. I think this show, you know, it's really fun because I do pick, you know, for like Indie Film Cafe or some of the other shows that I do, I pick a lot of movies that are terrible, you know, mm-hmm. and that maybe are hard to watch even.
Right.
And Horror Film Lovers is great because, you know, we, like we said earlier, it's, you know, it's always going to be something that either one of us really likes, and most likely
an enjoyable movie.
Exactly. So
not three movies that were made in three different decades clipped together.
Oh yeah. if you don't know what we're talking about, John, it's one of Paul's picks for Indie Film Cafe. He's done that like three or four times. Like he finds these movies. Films,
one made in the 60s, one made in the 70s, two completely different countries, but they're spliced together just right where it's almost.
He did that just recently for another one. He found us another movie like that. And good God. It was fun, you know, it's fun to make fun of these things.
Right.
But like, you know, you watch them and you're like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, right. You know, Sarah, it's funny because it's always, Paul always loves having you on the show.
Because, I love being on the show.
Like, yeah, because you
and those movies, even if they're hard to watch, it's fun bantering about them afterwards.
Yeah. That's, I guess, you know, that's my thing. When I watch a movie these days, I have to stick through the whole thing, you know, and then, yeah. At the end, I have to like plan that it's
getting. Well, if you were to watch it and you weren't doing a show about it, you could just turn it off.
Right.
But when you're forced to just watch it, and you're just like,
I that's exactly what I'm going to be doing for horror. Well, so Horror, Blood, and Coffee, another horror show. I do. We watch newer movies, and I watched one in the theater. I will not say what it is because you'll have to wait till, you know, horror film, Horror, Blood, and Coffee later this month. But Samantha Marie and I watched this movie, and I honestly wanted to walk out, but the whole time I was like, I have to watch the whole thing because I have to talk about it. You know, and so I'm stuck, you know, and I paid $5 for the shitty movie. I'll talk to you guys about it after, but I don't want to say it here, but you know, it happens, you know, there's sometimes there's just some movies that are just terrible, but once again, that will not be this podcast. Most likely. Ones we don't like. I mean, and you know, well, who knows? You said earlier. I know
one of us, the one who picks it definitely likes it, and it's we'll see how the other one feels.
I could have hated Pet. I could have, you know, yeah. I could have hated Devil's Candy, but I liked them. I liked them both really much. And so I'm glad you liked this one, and you know, you could have hated this one. I don't know. Like this could have bored people, you know, to some people. Have,
especially if you're like if you're the traditional blood and guts horror movie fan or whatever. Like you said, it's a disguise as a horror movie, but it's more of a drama.
Yeah. It's a drama.
Which I like dramas. Like I'm the person, like my favorite movies are romantic comedies and stuff like that and drama. So for it to be kind of a horror slash, you know, drama, like that works for me.
And it worked for you too, John, right?
Yep.
Yeah. One word there. Yep. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for checking this out. Join us next month for who knows what it is.
Right. See what I pick.
Yeah, see what Sarah picks, and we'll be back then. Have a good one, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.